Happy Father's Day. Genesis chapter 19, verses 27 through 28. Early the next morning, Abraham got up and returned to the place where he had stood before the Lord. He looked down toward Sodom and Gomorrah, toward the land of the plain, and he saw dense smoke rising from the land, like smoke from a furnace. It's all gone. Not one stone left on top of another. It's all gone. We started this series with Lot the week before Mother's Day. And yeah, in true Barry fashion, there was actually a Mother's Day sermon that went into this particular series. Yeah, I'm betting you don't forget that one for a while. And I told you, I promised you, this series would end on Father's Day before we went to the park. And well, we are at the end of Lot's story. And you know what? We still have a lot to learn about life. Lot was called a righteous man by the Apostle Peter in 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 7. And if he rescued Lot, a righteous man who was distressed by the depraved conduct of the lawless, I struggle with that still. I'm all the way at the end of this series, and just so you know, I researched this. I wanted to know what made Lot righteous. I know in my heart of hearts that in spite of all he did, that probably his righteousness stemmed from the fact that he had a belief in God. But it still just seems off to me. So I kept digging, and it was actually, I remember the time because I looked at the clock one morning, about 3:08 in the morning. I rolled over and looked at the clock, and God's like, "Hey, Barry, ready for your answer?" I'm like, "Okay, God, we really got to work on your timing a lot better. Okay, I got no thing to write." He's like, you won't forget this. Here's your answer of what made Lot righteous. You ready? Should have a drum roll, right? Here we go. It does not matter. You know why? Because God is God, and he knows a person's heart. Not me. And the reason I want to know what made Lot righteous is because how could a man live such a worldly life and still be called righteous? And I'm not concerned about Lot. You know why I want to know, right? Because I'm looking for the loophole. Because if it worked for Lot, and Lot could live such a worldly life, and he could still be accepted, then doesn't that mean that, hey, I can now live a worldly life, and if I just figure out how Lot did it, I too can be accepted? Doesn't that make good sense? I mean, if it worked for Lot, it should work for me, right? And at the end, I want to be accepted by God. So now I have a news flash for you. Lot was not accepted and was not rescued because of his righteousness. This is what it says. So when God destroyed the cities of the plain, he remembered Abraham and brought Lot out of the catastrophe that overthrew the cities where Lot had lived. This is a game changer, folks. Because again, I want to couple Lot's deliverance with the fact that Peter calls him righteous, and lo and behold, that's not the way it works. Because in my righteousness, this is what I know. All of us become like one who is unclean. And all our righteous acts are like many filthy rags. We all shrivel up like a leaf, like the wind of our sins, and let the wind of our sins sweep us away. So Lot was spared because of Abraham. Now, does that mean that Abraham saved Lot? Absolutely, positively not. Lot was saved because of God's grace and mercy. However, God did allow Abraham to influence the outcome. And somewhere in the middle of that whole conversation over there where God, where Abraham is pleading for the righteous, and he says, hey, God, if you can find this many, he goes all the way there. Somewhere in the middle of all that, there's a really great sermon. But that's not today's sermon. Today, we folks have to deal with the elephant in the cave.
Tonight, we are going to read a new book. This one is called One Big Unicorn. By who wrote this? Oh, me! I wrote it. Oh, look, it's a puppet book. Here, watch this.
Best horn.
This is gonna be the best book ever.
Not to pat myself on the back, but yes, it probably will be. Here we go. One big unicorn, strong and free, thought he was happy as he could be. Then three little kittens came around and turned his whole life upside down.
Hey, that one looks like me.
No, what are you talking about? These are kittens. Any relation to a person living or dead is completely coincidental. They made him laugh. Ho-ho! They made him cry. He never should have said goodbye. And now he knows he could never part from those three little kittens that changed his heart. The end. Okay, all right, good night.
In Universal's 2010 movie, Despicable Me, we meet Gru, the supervillain and a downright despicable individual. He plans to steal the moon, and to do so, well, he is going to need the help of three little orphan girls that he adopts and decides to use. That's despicable, isn't it? In a huge twist, the despicable man grows a heart for these girls. In the end, he abandons his plan to save them. And in true movie fashion, they become a family and live happily ever after. Being despicable. The word means so worthless or obnoxious as to rouse moral indignation. The word means deserving to be despised or regarded with distaste, disgust, or disdain. Contemptible is what that means. Being despicable means very unpleasant or bad, causing strong feelings of dislike. When you look this word up, it has some synonyms that maybe I'm more familiar with. They are nasty, scummy, deplorable. And here's a good church word for you, wretched. Yeah, amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. Yeah, you know why that song got there this week, right? And make no mistake about it, we are studying Lot, and Lot was a despicable man. He was not a hero. He made his choices based on the bottom line, the accounting sheet. What's good for my budget? He placed his family in harm's way. What on earth was this man thinking, moving them into Sodom and Gomorrah? He devalued his children. There we go, and we'll get to that in just a few moments. He refused to lead his family on God's path. When it was time to leave the city, they said it's going to be destroyed, remember? The angels had to grab his hand and drag him and his family out. He did not seize God's opportunity. How many people did he tell? Two people. Everybody else, he left them to fend for themselves. And unfortunately, unlike Gru, Lot's story does not end happily ever after. After all, he never seems to grow beyond himself. And Lot becomes history's very first caveman, a man that lives in a cave. And from that cave comes a despicable plan. Lot and his two daughters left Zoar and settled in the mountains, for he was afraid to stay in Zoar. He and his two daughters lived in a cave. One day, the older daughter said to the younger, "Our father is old, and there is no man around here to give us children, as is the custom all over the earth. Let's get our father to drink wine and sleep with him and preserve our family line through our father." And I know what's running through your mind because we sent the kids downstairs. By the way, this is one of those sermons. I'm glad we sent the kids downstairs because this is at least a PG-13 sermon. Okay? We sent the kids down, and I know what you're thinking. You are thinking, what is wrong with them? Right? How can they live like that? You know how I know that's what you're thinking? Because I know most of you, and I've heard us talk about us. Notice I said us talk about the younger generation. Isn't this what we usually think? What's wrong with those kids? What are they thinking? What are they doing? How on earth could they live like that? How could they do that? How could they be that despicable? But I have a question for you. We criticize them without understanding, without taking into a very important consideration. Where did they learn it from? It must have been the kid down the street, right? That's not where they learned it from. Do you know where they got their lesson from? Whose playbook they're executing? The older generation. They have spent their time watching how we live our lives and how we do our ways and how we do our things and how we manage our life. And as much as we like to keep letting our gums flap and we keep preaching at them, they aren't listening to our preaching. They are watching our life. And let's not forget, it's not about the man in the street. It's all about the man in the house. Or in this case, the man in the cave. Because his daughters had learned everything they need to know about life from Daddy Lot. And while I called Lot not a very influential man when he was sitting at the gate, when it came to his kids, he was very, very influential in the way that he lived his life. So I would like to take a few moments just to show you how Lot created the situation for himself. And it begins with some despicable influence. He was afraid to stay in Zoar, so he and his daughters went to live in a cave. Now, you know the twisted irony about that, right? Because originally the angels told Lot to run for the mountains, and then Lot turned around in Genesis chapter 19, verses 18 through 20, but Lot said to them, "No, my lords, please, your servant has found favor in your eyes, and you have shown great kindness to me in sparing my life." Okay. My life. "But I can't flee to the mountains. This disaster will overtake me, and I'll die. Look, here is a town near enough to run to, and it is small. Let me flee to it." And it is very small, isn't it? "Then my life will be spared." God gave Lot exactly what he asked him for. I mean, God told him to run to the mountains, and Lot's like, "You know, God, I'm not really into the mountain thing. I don't camp. I don't hike. I don't cook on open flames. God, there's a really cute little quaint town just down the road a piece. How about you allow me and my daughters to go, and we're going to live there?" And by the way, the name of that town was Zoar. So here is Lot, and he is sitting there, and he's running up and down the street, and he's looking at what's going on, and he begins to look around, and in his quest to protect his daughters, he forces them into isolation. So he's living in the town, and everywhere he's looked, he's afraid, and everywhere he's going, he's afraid, and he just can't figure it all out. So he finally says, "I've got the solution. Let's move to the mountains." and let's take nobody with us. Let's just go live in isolation. He was not teaching them to follow God, but instead to live in fear. Think that for a second. He was not teaching the next generation to follow God. I don't see him praying. I don't see him reading scripture to his kids. I don't see him doing the things that needs to be done. He was not teaching them how to follow God. Instead, he said, look around you, kids. All of it is bad and evil and rotten, and be afraid of all of it. As a matter of fact, let's just go live on an island. And in the end, he left them with no hope and no future. Daddy Lot left the moral cupboards completely bare. He left nothing behind, not a crumb for their mouths, nothing. He just left them bare. And I'm looking at your faces, and you're going through your life right now, and you're thinking, okay, my cupboards are full of food. Are my spiritual cupboards full of things that my kids can feast on? Or are they full of things that we tell them to be afraid of? There is no man around here, so they're in their cave, to give us children, as is the custom, all over the earth. And I want to zoom in on one little phrase out of these daughters' plans. All over the earth. You see it, right? Lot had left something behind for his kids, all right. He left them in possession of a worldly mindset. All over the earth. We know how it's done in this town. We know how it's done in this town. We know what our culture's doing. We know how this is supposed to work. Daddy taught us how our life is supposed to work. And we know that sometimes we just have to step outside the bounds because the world's important. They were more interested in how the world survives than how God provides. Do you not see this? I mean, could these girls not have prayed, hey, God, could you just rain a man down from heaven? I guess he could have done it that way, or maybe had some wander into his cave. They could have went to God, right? But you remember how Lot solved his problems, right? I think I'll take care of this myself. I'll look out across the plains, and I'm going to take the place where I can be most profitable. Yeah, the girls learned their lessons very well. Don't think they didn't study at all, because they've looked at Daddy Lot, and they're like, okay, so we're looking around, and we know how biology works, and you have to have male and female to make baby. And we're female, and there ain't no male around, so how do I fix my problem? It's all up to me, right? I mean, I have to figure out my own issues. And you know what? I know exactly when the girls learned this lesson. Genesis chapter 19, verse 8. This is Lot speaking, remember? Look, I have two daughters who have never slept with a man. Let me bring them out to you, and you can do what you want with them. But don't do anything to these men, for they come under the protection of my roof. You know what the girls learned that night? You don't matter. You're not important. The men that God sent, they're under the protection of my roof, but who else was supposed to be under the protection of that roof? Those girls. And Lot looks at them and says, honey, there's work to be done. We've got to protect God. And so guess what? We're going to do this at your expense. Could you imagine what the girls' faces were like that night? As they listened up to that door and that mob was gathering, and Daddy is out there saying, offer them up. Yeah. You don't think they remember that moment? You don't think those moments make an impression? You don't think kids know that when you're just trying to take a pass, you don't think they remember the moments and the times when They should have been the important ones. But you know what? I don't want to give up my seat. I don't want to give up my space. I don't want to give up what's important to me. Let them fend for themselves, and I am just going to stay here. Hey, God, it's just me and you, right? Yeah. These girls that we think make us sick because of their plan, I get where they learned this plan. They learned it from Daddy Lot and watching Daddy Lot live Daddy life. And now it's their turn to be in charge. And what do they come up with? Let's get our father to drink wine. Here's the start of their plan. Now, I would like to remind you something, because a lot of times when we see the pictures online of Lot and his two daughters, they always paint them as 20-year-olds or 30-year-olds or completely grown-up little girls. But remember, we're back in biblical times. And these were girls that were betrothed to be married. So we're probably talking girls that are somewhere around the age of 12 to 16 years old. Okay, that makes us even more creepy, as my youngest son likes. He loves that word, creepy. Lot is a creepy man, because guess what? Here are his girls. And I've just got a hunch, okay? I got a couple of hunches that I want you to think about. If his daughters had come to Lot and said, hey, Dad, will you have sex with us so that we can get pregnant and have a baby? I am going to go on a hunch here to say Lot would have looked at them like they had lost their mind. I'm not doing that. No, look, I'm not the most righteous person in the world. I'm not the best dad, but I ain't even doing that. The girls knew. You know what else I'm betting? And again, I got no biblical context for this. I got no scripture to back it up. But I'm just going to bet that these girls had seen their dad drunk once or twice. I'm going to bet that they had seen him tie on quite a few. And so they are looking at Dad and they're like, okay, we know what we need to do. The problem is we got to figure out how to get Dad to cooperate. And when Lot's daughters hatched their plan, they knew exactly how to address Dad. Don't go talk about the issue that I'm going to try to solve on my own. Let's talk about how do I get to my dad. They knew his weakness. Yeah, let's cook Dad a nice meal. We'll start talking about the old times and how good things are and how the good old days work. And we'll just slip him a glass of wine. And when he's finished drinking that one, we'll slip him another glass of wine. And when he's finished drinking that one, we'll slip him another glass of wine. And he's just going to keep drinking. And we know Dad. We know his habits. He's going to keep drinking until he is in a drunken stupor. They knew his habits, they knew his weakness, and they knew exactly how to do it. Doesn't that scare you? It should, parents, because guess what? Dads, parents, adults, your children learn how to deal with you by watching you. You can give them all the lectures in the universe, but if they are going to do exactly how they see you do it. You know how I know? I got a couple kids, and they get lectures from me all the time, but sometimes I see a lot more of myself than my kids than I want to see. Only at work that I can get them to do as I say and not as I do. My life would be so much easier. But that's not how it works. You know why? Because the problem is the man in the house, not the people in the street. The problem are the adults that were put in responsibility to teach these kids, to train these kids, to have these kids go the right way. Our responsibility, and instead of that taking on that responsibility, we were busy, right? We got things to do, places to go, people to see, money to make, lives to share. And then when we're old and gray and we're sitting in our cave looking back on our life and we're like, well, that's not what I taught them. Yeah, it is. Really. It is. It is. They're doing exactly what they learned from us. And with that backdrop, now we can look at the despicable action in a whole new light. That night, They got their father to drink wine. It doesn't sound like this was a hard convincing. I don't think they had to twist Lot's arm or feed it to him in an IV. It says they got their father to drink wine. And the older daughter went in and slept with him. He was not aware of it when she lay down and when she got up. The next day, the older daughter said to the younger, "Last night I slept with my father. Let's get him to drink wine again tonight." Really? Two nights in a row? "And you go in and sleep with him so we can preserve our family line through our father." So they got their father to drink wine that night also, and the younger daughter went in and slept with him. And again, he was not aware of it when she lay down and when she got up. I started to bring me a bottle of Pepto-Bismol because that just makes my stomach sick. And as angry as I want to be at those young ladies, it's Lot. Their plan worked perfectly. It worked so well, it worked twice. You know what they say, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. Shame on you, Lot. You were so busy mourning your losses that you forgot. Your future's right there in front of you. Your responsibilities didn't end at the cave. You brought them girls with you. You have work that needs to be done. Could you imagine? I don't know if Lot died before his grandsons were born, but when his daughters began to show, and Lot's looking around, he's kind of like, you know, there are no other boys around here. So either we've got two miraculous births happening, you know, this seems to line up really good with that night that my daughters made that really nice meal for me. What did I do? What did I do? And where would they get such an awful, horrible plan to get me drunk so I would do this? It's despicable, isn't it? But here's the deal. The despicable results got covered under the grace of God. Genesis chapter 19, verses 36 through 38. "So both of Lot's daughters became pregnant by their father. The older daughter had a son, and she named it Moab. He is the father of the Moabites today. The younger daughter also had a son, and she named him Ben-Ammi. He is the father of the Amorites of today." So their plan worked perfectly, and not only did they get kids, they got exactly what they needed. They got boys. And remember, we're back in biblical time. I didn't write the rules. I didn't write the book. I didn't write the text, but boys were viewed as a better choice for children than girls. And the funny thing is that the birth resulted in people, in two peoples that lived in the land, the Moabites and the Amorites. And we find out in Deuteronomy chapter 9 that, well, "Then the Lord said to me, 'Do not harass the Moabites or provoke them to war, for I will not give you any part of their land. I have given Ar to the descendants of Lot as a possession.'" Wow, so when the Israelites came back in, they're supposed to take all the town? God said, uh-uh, their territory is off limits to you guys because of what Lot did. In Deuteronomy chapter 2, verse 19, we're told, "When you come to the Ammonites, do not harass them or provoke them to war, for I will not give you possession to any of their land belonging to the Ammonites. I have given it to the possession of Lot's descendants." So even though the act was despicable, even though there was nothing, even in that, God said, when the Israelites came back and said, "I'm going to give you a constant reminder of what it means to be a follower, what it means to not just try to live righteous and be a good person. I want you to understand what it means to be God, because these people, you can't touch them. They're off limits." And these people became a thorn in the flesh of the Israelites for their entire days. Remember back in Judges when we were studying Gideon? Who was it that came and persecuted them? It was the Moabites. Yeah. Man. So if Lot had just done the right thing, and he really was a godly person, not just a self-righteous person, then guess what? this would have all been solved. Israel could have taken all of the land. Not that they actually were going to listen to God and do it that way either. But here's the really ironic twist. And this is why I truly, truly, truly love God. In spite of all of Lot's story, in spite of the fact that he really deserves not to have any space in the Bible whatsoever, you know what happened out? Both of these lines found their way into the lineage of Jesus. Ruth chapter 1, verse 22. So Naomi returned from Moab, accompanied by Ruth the Moabite, her daughter-in-law, arriving in Bethlehem as the barley harvest was beginning. So here we have Ruth, and we know how Ruth married Boaz, and Boaz and her have kids, and we move on down the line, and eventually we get to Jesse, who gets King David, and King David is what attached. So in the line of Jesus are the Moabites. And you know what? 1 Kings chapter 14, verse 31. And Rehoboam rested with his ancestors and was buried with them in the city of David. His mother's name was Naamah. She was an Ammonite. And Abihah, his son, succeeded him as king. So here we go. So now we have the other line. God provided grace to both of these people, even though they didn't have the, shall we call, pedigree. I take heart in that. Because I've got a lot in my past, a lot of things in my life, that I am worried to death that, you know what, somewhere all of this is going to come back to bite me. Somewhere along the way, all of this is going to end up bad for me. God has grace. Even though judgment was deserved, God said, I'm going to turn these births into a people, and these people into nations, and these nations will produce individuals that will be part of the plan of salvation. His name is Jesus. I find that incredible. What a father God is. Because what could he have done? He could have wrote it all off, but he said, no. There's room for all under the cross of Christ. Everybody is welcome under the cross of Christ. Regardless how you got here, it matters not to God. The question is, have you found the cross of Christ? But I don't want to lose where we started. Ooh, there you go. Happy trigger finger today. The despicable truth, folks. We have a lot to learn about molding our future. What deposits are you making for your future? Yeah, I got a savings account. I got a retirement account. Got a couple of them. You know, that's just what we do, right? Trying to make sure my house gets paid off, make sure my debt structure is low, make sure I got enough money to cover the bills so that when I'm all... That's not the future I'm talking about. How about the future of our church? Well, the church didn't have any debt. We're all good. You know, we got people that come every Sunday. This is today. What are we doing to mold our future? What is tomorrow going to look like for God's kingdom here at Parkview Christian Church? What is next year going to look like here at Parkview Christian Church for God's kingdom? What is the next generation going to look like? You do realize some of those kids downstairs that we're talking to, they are going to be your leaders and your future of this church. And some of you are scared to death. Oh my gosh. Imagine what kind of music we'll be singing then. Okay? You'll be scared to death. But you do understand, it is our responsibility now while they're young to, as the video we showed at the beginning of the screen, at the beginning of the service, to lead them, to mold them, to minister to them, to teach them, but more importantly, to show them how we live our life in such a way that it influences them on how they should live their life. I think we have a lot to learn about what it really means to live worldly. I think we do. The good news is I've got two sermon series coming right behind this that are going to address all of these things that we've talked about, all these lessons we have to learn. The next two sermon series is called School. We're going to school to learn our lessons. And some of them are some pretty hard lessons.